But to you I say, to the rest who are in Thyatira, as many as do not hold this teaching, who have not known the deep things of Satan, as they call them. To the rest of you I am speaking, says the Lord, in his letter to the bishop of Thyatira, to those of you who have not taken up this teaching of that woman, of Jezebel, and who do not know the things that these people claim to know, the so-called deep things of wisdom, which are nothing other than the deep things of Satan, as they call them. Under the name of Jezebel, my beloved, we must also include yet another category. Beyond, in quotation marks, the so-called illumined ones we spoke of last time, who remain within the church, who attend the services, who receive Holy Communion, yet who, in matters of faith, act in a manner different from the faith of the church. We are only saying that this woman, the Jezebel of the letter to the Bishop of Thyatira, belongs to a Gnostic heresy. Let us not forget this, because the Lord says about her in the letter that she teaches and leads my servants astray into fornication and into idolatry, and so she belongs to a Gnostic heresy, just as we also saw with the Nicolaitans, who were themselves a Gnostic heresy. What matters is that this so-called knowledge, falsely so-called, this gnosis, this knowledge falsely named, as the ancient fathers of our church in St. Irenaeus call it, is characterized here by the Lord himself as satanic. And the Lord turns toward those who stand around the bishop, who have remained faithful to sound teaching and did not move off into the supposedly deeper knowledge and wisdom that the heretics laid claim to. In reality, however, these were demonic and satanic forms of knowledge and wisdom. The heretics indeed spoke of the deep things of their wisdom, an ineffable wisdom, an ineffable and inaccessible knowledge, unreachable for the profane and the uninitiated. And because the mystery of lawlessness, according to the Apostle Paul, is continually at work, for this reason today, the Gnostic heresy is Freemasonry. Indeed, Freemasonry itself calls all of us uninitiated. They are the ones who possess the illumination and the initiation into the deep knowledge, the deep wisdom, the deep philosophy, which we, according to their claims, are ignorant of. Therefore, Freemasonry is nothing other than the natural descendant of ancient Gnosticism. Or, if you will, Freemasonry is a neo-Gnosticism. Perhaps I have spoken many times about Freemasonry, and I may be accused of having developed a kind of obsession with Freemasonry. My beloved, that is not the issue. Freemasonry is a contemporary reality which influences everyone and everything in our time, and it is poor strategy to underestimate the strength of the enemy. In order to fight the enemy, we must never underestimate his power. And Freemasonry does have power. It is the power of Satan, and for this reason, we always fight, and we shall fight as long as we live, and we are obliged always to fight Freemasonry. Do not be misled by the fact that it has no public life. Do not be misled by the fact that it never appears before an audience, in court cases, and so on. Do not be misled by the fact that it never gives lectures under its own name. Do not be misled by the fact that we see nothing, no publication that bears its name. Do not let this deceive you. Freemasonry acts cunningly underground. It is Gnosticism. And indeed, if you will, this is what we shall demonstrate today, with the help of God. We are going to prove that Freemasonry has a Gnostic dimension. And once we see that Freemasonry has a Gnostic dimension, and we will see this from Freemasonry's own official documents, then its case falls under that letter of the Lord to the Bishop of Thyatira, the letter that condemns the woman Jezebel, together with that alien teaching of hers that comes to deceive the servants of Christ and lead them astray. And since Christ condemns her, it means, clearly, most clearly, that he also condemns Freemasonry. Once we have proved this, and I will ask you, my beloved, to pay attention to this, let us see from its own official texts how Freemasonry itself characterizes itself. If, I repeat, not in an indirect way, since the matter is plain as day, but in a direct way, it is proved, I repeat, that Freemasonry is Gnosticism. The matter is settled completely. It is condemned by the Church, through and through, because Holy Scripture itself has spoken against Gnosticism. And the Apostle Paul writes against Gnosticism in his letter to Timothy. And the Apostle Peter, in the Catholic epistles, writes against Gnosticism. But the fathers also fought Gnosticism furiously. because it furiously fought the church. But since Gnosticism is not known to many, without going into detail, because much has been said about it, in a few words I would say this. In reality, Gnosticism is a positive philosophy. It accepts a God, it accepts a world, it accepts a human being, it accepts certain relationships between God, the world, and the human being. It looks at the world with double eyes. It sees it as both good and evil. Within the world, it sees the good and the evil. And it says, the portion of the good must have been made by a good God. The portion of the evil must have been made by an evil God. This God is not one. He is of two hypostases. He has two persons or two gods. Either two persons or two gods. Take note, because in Gnostic literature, there is great variety. Very great. That is to say, it has differences. The Gnosticism of Marcion, the Gnosticism of Basilides, and of many others. They always come with certain shades of difference. The fundamental basis in all these systems of Gnosticism is the duarchy, that there are two gods, the evil God and the good God. The God who creates evil, the God who creates the good. These two quarrel and wrestle perpetually, and the victim is always the human being. The human being who at times seeks to be freed from the evil God. In the end, the human being always hopes for such a deliverance. He lives within nature. In a certain sense, he has no transcendent God. And although he considers God invisible, in truth, God is not transcendent in Gnosticism. And because Gnosticism wants to borrow so much from outside itself, it is naked on its own. It has nothing of its own. It takes whatever human philosophy has offered up to now. Whatever the mystery religions have offered, Orphism, the Eleusinian mysteries, Hermes Trismegistus, Hermeticism, the mysteries of the East, of Cybele, the mysteries of Osiris and Isis. It is drawn from all of these, and it is drawn from Judaism as well. It has blended them all into one mixture and presents it. The danger of Gnosticism is that it never openly denies Christianity to you. Here lies the danger. If someone tells me I deny you, you stand against me. You are my enemy. That is one thing. But when you hide and do not show that you deny, when you move underwater, when you exist, you breathe inside the church, you receive Holy Communion, you attend services, yet you are alien to her. Here is the danger, here is the danger, as we shall see with the Masons too, that they receive Holy Communion, they attend services, and if you wish, they even use this as their argument, but I attend services, he tells you, but I am a good Christian, but I receive Holy Communion. This is the tragedy. Not the argument, the tragedy. For this reason, you saw that this Jezebel was operating inside the Church of Thyatira. You saw how she too, we resolved this last time as well. She is therefore a type of the modern Gnostics, the Masons, just as she was of the ancient Gnostics. But as I told you, we will turn to their own writings. We observe, we see in their writings the following. In a prominent place inside their lodge, they have the letter gamma, or G, or D, as we would say in English, which is placed inside a radiant star. A star with rays, and at the center is the letter gamma. For us, Greeks, we have our own alphabet, while the Latin-based languages have the letter Z, or D. For us, it is the third letter of the alphabet, whereas in the Latin alphabet, it is the seventh letter of the alphabet. Sometimes this is not inside a radiant star, but is within the compound of the square and the compass, that angular tool. And the compass is here, vertical. On top, the square is below. And within the compound of square and compass, the square forms the right angle, and there is the letter G, or D, or Z, without the radiant star, when it appears within this compound. Now, since the square and the compass are the principal symbol of the Masons, I will tell you briefly the following. It has a rich and many-sided symbolism. I will tell you the most important one, I think. Below, the square with its right angle is the symbol of matter, and indeed, of perfected matter, because we have a right angle. Above, we have the compass, which is open to 45 degrees, according to the Masonic texts themselves that I am citing to you. The compass is open to 45 degrees. And it indicates it is the symbol of spirit. Spirit over matter is the whole symbolism. Spirit over matter. Duarchy. How will spirit be imposed upon matter? Note, my beloved, that in Christianity there is no duarchy, there are no two gods. God made the heaven, and the earth, and all that is in it, the earth, and there is nothing that was not made by the one God. And since there is nothing that was not made by the one God, nothing that has come into being came into being apart from the Word of God, how is it possible that there should be a contradiction in the works of God? How is it possible that good and evil should ever exist, and that the objects themselves, the creatures, should come into opposition with God making them so? If evil exists in the world, my beloved, it is not due to a duarchy. It is due to the intervention, by free choice, of rational beings, the first of whom is the devil, and after him, human beings. It is the intervention of evil, through the free choice of rational beings. This is how evil entered, and there was a disturbance of creation. This is how our faith explains evil, and not that it is the creation of some other God, or of the one God, in some contradictory state. There is therefore no contradiction between spirit and matter. For the infinite spirit, who is God, the eternal spirit, creates the material world. How could it ever stand opposed to the existence of God, if such a thing were even possible? The heavens declare the glory of God. How could the heavens ever turn against God? Never. The soul together with the body, the soul together with the body, the soul together with the body. The body will be raised and it will be saved. Matter will be saved. For the Gnostics, this is unthinkable, simply unthinkable. Matter for them is an evil thing. So the compass is imposed upon the square, upon matter. It is the imposition of spirit upon matter. But while matter stands at 90 degrees in its full expression, the compass stands at 45 degrees, not 90, because the human spirit has not yet been imposed upon matter. It is still struggling to impose itself. And within this combined emblem stands the letter gamma, or the D, as I told you. Indeed, the Masons lament that they do not have one single letter that could correspond to all the languages and peoples of the earth, so that all the Masons of the whole world could understand it. What does this mean? I will follow it through with the Latin form. Many words, after all, have their origin in the Latin-derived languages. From the Greek language, you will see it presently. With the letter G, we have the word God, which means God. So then this G signifies God. Underline it. God. This is what it means in Freemasonry. Freemasonry is the Masonic order. Further, the English Mason and poet Burns writes the following, the hieroglyphic luminous touch, which no one other than the brothers beholds. He calls it Lumpedon. This letter, D, he names Lumpedon. A light which only, he says, the faithful. Only the brothers can know the full meaning of the meaning of this D. According to Plantagenet, this D is of Hermetic origin. It is furnished by the so-called Hermetic philosophy, which contains magic within it, Dalco. These men are Masons. In one of his speeches said the following, the letter D, which adorns the lodge, does not express only the name of Mat, of the great architect of the universe. Mat, he says, meaning God. But it signifies at the same time the science of geometry. So our own gamma, which we have, geometria, or geometer in English, geometry in French. The G, then, is God, God, geometer, geometry. According to Lenhoff and Posner, the meaning of the G is God, God. Geometry, Genesis, generation, generation, Genesis, and Gnosis. Gnosis is not written. Forgive me for saying it. It is not written. It is not written. It is not rendered the way the English say it as knowledge. Rather, it is translated, and the very word remains as it is. Gnosis, Gnosis. From the Gnostics. And it is translated into every language of the world under the name knowledge with a G in front. That is why we want to stay on this theme of knowledge, of Gnosticism. In many Masonic bodies, so the Masonic dictionary tells us, the G appears not only on the radiant star, but also between the legs of the interlocked compass and square, just as I explained to you, and as is the custom among us Greeks as well. But having seen this G, the gamma that refers to the theme of Gnosis, that is the initial gamma, we move on to the 12th degree of initiation in Masonry to see what meaning this gamma carries. My beloved, I will read to you only their own texts from the degrees of initiation that they have, translated directly. I will only pause and comment. The master of ceremonies, they write, removes the covering from the candidate, and they spread upon the floor a cloth on which is painted a great star with five rays, bearing in the middle the letter gamma, about which I have spoken to you. The Grand Master turns toward the candidate who is about to be initiated into the 12th degree. They have given the candidate a symbolic name, and they call him Moabon. Not that he keeps this name. It is simply symbolic. It is, we might say, a typological feature of the initiation, this name, Moabon, he says. In order to demonstrate to us that you have well understood our teachings, tell us what the mysterious letter signifies. That is, what this letter means. The candidate is asked. Geometry, fertility. The grand teacher says, quite right. Now learn, then, that in addition to these, it also signifies knowledge. You have answered well, and now I tell you this as well. It further means knowledge, too. At this point, the ritual book writes that a long and full explanation of the teaching of the Gnostics follows. Here the teacher speaks to the one being initiated and explains to him what this knowledge is. We take a few excerpts from what the teacher says to the initiate. I read to you the reading, Gnosticism. You see, even the name itself, Gnosticism, great and beloved brother, is the sum of certain teachings which hold an important place in the spiritual and moral history of humanity. The word gnosis, a Greek word, must be understood as the opposite of faith. Pay attention here. In the first centuries of human ignorance, the Gnostics appeared, worthy pioneers of progress. Faith had as its object the dogma derived from revelation, as well as events supposedly regarded as historical. It constituted, in one word, the erroneous knowledge of the crowd of Christians. Gnosis, on the contrary, was for a small number of chosen ones. Its aim was the investigation and examination of the prevailing ideas down to their first principle, and the founding of a new philosophy. Here, my beloved, we have the following point. I will make one comment. Gnosis, he says, comes to turn against the so-called faith, based on revelation concerning supposedly historical matters. Do you know what these supposedly historical matters are? These are the incarnation, the crucifixion, the resurrection of Christ. This so-called knowledge calls them merely historical. And the claim is that, through the New Testament, and first through the Old, just as we have the revelation of God at Sinai and in the prophets, so supposedly through the Old and supposedly through the New Testament, we are given the revelation of things which, in order to be known, must be received through faith. He says, therefore, here, this we fight against. We do not want the factor of faith. We want the factor of gnosis. Those of you who can grasp this, before I go further, you understand what demonic spirit we have here. This is what the ancient serpent said. The devil, the thrice accursed devil, said to our first parents, your eyes will be opened and you will know. Until then, our first parents stood on faith, that is, on what God had told them, that they should not eat of the fruit. They believed completely, and the matter was settled. Then the devil comes forward to reject faith, speaking his slander. God told you this because he envies you, because he does not want you to become gods. And when you taste of the fruit, then you will have no need of faith. Then you will have knowledge. Your eyes shall be opened. Does not the sacred text say there? Your eyes shall be opened, and you shall know good from evil. You see who it is that rejects faith and proposes this knowledge. The devil. Clearly, with absolute clarity. And in the centuries that followed, if you will, from the Middle Ages down to our own day, though it always existed, but I speak of our own time, this came to be called rationalism, that I do not accept anything unless my mind grasps it. Rationalism, the rule of reason, that is what it is. I have no need of faith, only knowledge, only what I will verify by my own observation and grasp with my own mind. But is it possible for me to accept everything that exists only on the condition that I will understand it? There are so many things I do not understand, my beloved. Far more so, I am not speaking of natural things, but far more of metaphysical things. Naturally, of spiritual realities which the small mind of man can never possibly comprehend. And I continue, Gnosticism says that the aim of this knowledge is the investigation and examination of prevailing ideas down to their first principle, and the framing of a new philosophy. Because, as you know, Gnosticism found Christianity. Forgive me. Christianity found Gnosticism, which had come before it. Indeed, Gnosticism had begun 3 centuries before Christ. It stood at its greatest height for another 3 centuries after Christ. Its last remnants lingered until the 6th century, but Gnosticism in reality still lives, behold, Freemasonry lives. Yet the Gnostics claimed and used to say that they possessed the new philosophy. This philosophy which they spoke of and put forward, the Apostle Paul takes up and gives them his answer. Listen to how the Apostle Paul gives his answer. The Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Colossians, listen to what he says. Perhaps now, if you hear the text, you will understand the meaning of the passage. You see, he says to the Colossians, "Take care. Let no one carry you off as spoil through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the elements of the world, and not according to Christ. You see, take heed," he says, "that no one carry you away through philosophy." What philosophy is this? It is Gnosticism. It is Gnosticism. And how does he describe this philosophy, this Gnosticism? Vain deceit, hollow deception. And truly, Freemasonry too, my beloved, is a hollow megalomania, hollow to its very marrow. And after the tradition of men, if you read a little of their initiations and so on, the theory of Freemasonry, you will see, my beloved, that it is all the contrivance of the human mind. They thought it up in their own minds, arranged it, and built this foolish human construction. When he says, according to the elements of the world, since the Gnostics spoke about elements, the Apostle Paul uses their own word, according to the elements of the world, and not according to Christ, for in him, in Christ, dwells all the fullness. I should tell you that pleroma, fullness, is a Gnostic term. The Gnostics of that time used it, and by it they meant that which fills the space between the good God and the evil God and matter. And they placed 30 divinities between the first great good God and the last. You are a member because you have entered into the life of Christ, who is the head of every principality and authority. Notice that the words principality and authority come from the Gnostic vocabulary. All of this shows, my beloved, how the Apostle Paul gives his answer. Did you see how he answers? If we had the Apostle Paul today. But why would we need to have him with the very same words he would answer the phenomenon of Freemasonry? And he would grieve because Christians are being drawn away into Freemasonry. The Masonic text continues. The struggle between the simple Christians and the Gnostics, says the teacher in their initiation, also began from the very beginning. The struggle. The Gnostics were strong, owing to their spiritual superiority. They always had a sense of superiority, as you will know. The Masons regard us, they regard us as profane, as the uninitiated. But when they speak of a spiritual superiority, these are what are called the deep things of Satan, those deep things of Satan that the Lord reveals as satanic. But in any case, the initiation text goes on, they had to fall as victims under the acts of an intolerant religion, that is, of Christianity, an enemy of free inquiry. So Christianity is an intolerant religion, one that is an enemy of free inquiry, because they are the people of knowledge. So do not forget that their lodges are called workshops, in which inquiries take place, philosophical inquiries. Do not let your mind go to thinking we have nails and hammers and pincers in there. The outstanding feature, here pay attention, the outstanding feature of Gnosticism, the teacher's initiation continues, is the two-person nature of the divinity, which is to say, what is the feature that is, we might say, the extreme point of Gnosticism. That the divinity has two persons. It is too hypostatic. The Gnostics have in view the two principles, good and evil, or better, spirit and matter, another expression under which the two principles are manifested. So then the divinity has two faces. We would have one body with two persons. From this side, the good, from that side, the evil, the two gods. According to the Gnostics, says the teacher then, God is a supernatural and invisible being and is manifested under two entirely opposite attributes. One of these attributes, the demiurge, that is to say, the architect of the universe, created the earth and fashioned man, unfortunately, in the creation of the world. The other attribute of the divinity also cooperated. This one, being an enemy of the principle of the good. Why? Gnosticism offers us no explanation to this question. It limits itself only to affirming one indisputable fact, that is, that good and evil coexist in nature, and that therefore the second principle participates in the creation of the world. Indeed, my beloved, Gnosticism did not manage to solve the problem of the source of evil and of good. This is true. It did not manage to solve it. You say, we have no answer. we do not know. That is why they have fabricated these myths, in order to try to give some explanation. But the Gnostics, the teacher continues in his initiation, were hoping. And among themselves, the Freemasons, likewise hope. So the Freemasons are the natural successors of the ancient Gnostics. One sees this very clearly, I think there is no doubt at all. The Freemasons likewise hope that a spirit, some higher spirit, will one day free humanity from the yoke of matter. So they do not believe that Christ is the liberator. But Christ did not come to deliver us from matter. This is the heavy artillery. For God, the eternal spirit, became matter, became man, took on a human body, and came to redeem matter, not to deliver us from matter. Do you understand, my beloved, these terrible heretical positions? You know, I was listening to a religious program on the radio from 7 to 7:30. And just for a moment, I only listened for about 5 minutes. Because toward the end, I heard something there. Some people were speaking, two or three of them, about souls. They were talking about souls. The souls, they said, go to the place where they were before. What place before? This is a Greek delusion. It is a Platonic delusion. The souls did not pre-exist. But what can one say? What can one say? Out of a world of delusion, of terrible delusion. Is this hope a mere hope or a real presentiment of progress? The future will answer this question. That is, we hope something will come of it, but will anything come of it? The future will answer. If it answers at all, whether progress, that slow working of the spirit, which is to save humanity, must be helped along by human efforts, and in this case by the Masons, by the Freemasons, whatever the popes may say, that is, the Pope. Each Pope who sits in Rome, because it is Rome they have in mind. All of this is written in the West. Gnosis, they write, with a capital G, was never heresy at all, but the very philosophy of Christianity itself. This is the terrible part, you see, the very philosophy of Christianity itself. And even if Gnosis did not survive, at the very least it served to destroy the religions upon whose ruins Christianity founded its dominion. And now those who are the neo-Gnostics certainly hope for the destruction of the religions, and above all of Christianity, and most particularly of Orthodoxy. Gnosis came. The teacher's initiation continues, at a time of worldwide collapse of convictions and ideas. This is true. It was able to say to the polytheists, to the idolaters, you no longer have either religion or philosophy. Nothing remains to you but mythology and skepticism. To the Jews, Gnosis said, your revelation, here I want you to pay attention, is incomplete, since it flows from only one hypostasis of the divinity, being the work of a single entity. So you did not know the highest mind, and you were not found able to interpret his law. The proof is that you are still waiting for a Messiah who must come to free you from the yoke of your alien and fallen civilization. In other words, since you speak of one God, the good God, your revelation is incomplete, because God is also the evil God. Here is their proof that an evil God exists too. You are waiting to be redeemed, to be rescued from evil, and evil is woven into nature itself. You see how they argue it. And to these same Christians, the Gnostics would even say, your leader was the highest expression of genius, and that much is true. But his apostles did not understand his teaching. Or his disciples corrupted the texts that the apostles left to them. Therefore, Christianity is useless, because it is not what Christ actually said. Christ, according to them, was a great Gnostic and even a Mason. For this reason, Freemasonry, listen to this, is the only true religion. Freemasonry, the only true religion. So a religion, then, takes up the work of Gnosticism, boasts of taking up the work of Gnosticism. Very plainly. So, gentlemen Masons, we will fight you, since you are Gnostics. Understand, you stand under the name of Jezebel, and we will fight you. It will succeed in destroying them as false religions, beginning with the Roman heresy, that is, with the Church of Rome, which they have in view, because, as I told you, they never used to reckon with Orthodoxy. But now they do reckon with it. This religion that has endured for so very long lasted such a long time. A state of affairs of 2,000 years. And so now, at its end, let us destroy it. Let us destroy Christianity. These are the things they write, my beloved, and you have seen very clearly that this is of Gnostic origin. Freemasonry is Gnosticism. I have told you this many times. I am stressing it now particularly on the occasion of this homily on the text from the book of the Apocalypse. Furthermore, the following is noted, thus says Taxil, the Gnostics venerated Cain. Indeed, they are the Cainites. And Canaan, Canaan is the one who received the curse from his father Noah, and Esau, he is the one who did not receive the blessing from Isaac, and Korah. Korah is the one who spoke against Moses. And Dathan and Abiram, they are the ones who spoke against Moses, and the earth opened and swallowed them, if you remember, from the Old Testament. These are the ones they honor. Do you know why? Let me move on a bit. Among the apostles, they honored Judas, whose betrayal, according to what they say, was an act of philosophical virtue. Why? Quite simply, because the people of the Old Testament were the people of Yahweh the Lord, but they were followers of an evil God. Because he created matter, he made the world, and therefore, he is an evil God. But those who stood against the people of God, as I told you, are Cain and Canaan, Esau and Korah, the ones I named for you, Dathan and Abiram, and whoever else. And these men are the great heroes for the Gnostics. Why? Because they came to stand up against the people of God, who worship the evil God, the God of matter, the creator of the world. But notice something. Remember Cain. In the Old Testament, Cain is the one who introduces civilization. Some people have this in mind. The Gnostics and the Freemasons say, we love Cain because he is the man who represented inquiry and knowledge, the man of civilization, whereas Abel and Seth are the softies. We don't want them. They are the men of faith. We don't want them. Do you understand now what knowledge means here? It turns against faith. And Judas too, because Christ brought in faith. Judas, by his betrayal, wanted to kill off this phenomenon of faith so that knowledge might be advanced, the knowledge the Gnostics possessed. And that is why they honor Judas. In the initiation of the 18th degree, which is called that of the Rose Cross Masons, the symbol of the initiation, my beloved, is a cross interwoven with roses. We read on the inscription of the cross, someone who sees a cross with roses will say, what a beautiful cross, and a most artistic one at that. There is an inscription on the cross. In Latin letters, a Latin motto, the I, the N, the R, the I. Here is what the teacher says. Listen, Igni, that is the I. Natura, the N, renovatur, the R, integra, the I. And here is what it means. Ignis is fire. Natura is nature. Renovo means to renew, to recreate. And integre means wholly, completely. So the sense of the sentence is this. By the force of fire, nature is renewed entirely. Nature has no connection whatsoever with Jesus Christ, King of the Jews. Nature, through fire, is renewed entirely. This is what Stoic philosophy teaches. This is what materialism teaches. Open the little philosophical dictionary of communism, and you will see this very definition. How creation is renewed. Creation. It says, the world has always existed, exists, and will exist, an eternal fire. That is what it writes there, in the little philosophical dictionary. It is Stoic philosophy. It is taken from the Stoics. So this is what the cross is for them. What else does the cross signify, apart from the inscription we saw? The cross, I read to you word for word, having become an object of worship, is for the initiated nothing other than the simple image of the equinoxes, when the sun in its yearly course covers successively these two points. So the cross is the symbol of the equinoxes. Furthermore, the rose, I read, is the most excellent emblem of woman. It symbolizes woman. And just as the cross depicts manhood or the sun, the cross is the symbol of manhood or of the sun. Indeed, the crux ansata, the Egyptian cross, which has this shape, pay attention, a vertical line, a horizontal stroke across the top, making a tau. And above the tau, we place a circle. These are the genital organs of the man, forgive me. So the cross is the symbol of manhood, or of the sun which fertilizes the earth. Osiris. Isis. Osiris is the sun. Isis is the earth. The earth is fertilized by the sun and gives birth to Horus, to man. Is this not idolatry? It is idolatry. This is what the cross is. And further, it depicts manhood, or the sun. In all its force, the sum of these two emblems, cross and rose, presents an additional meaning and expresses the union of the two sexes, or it is the symbol of the universal regeneration. Remember what we said on the matter of the letter G, which means generation, fertility. Well, this is the same thing now. The union of cross and rose, of man and woman, of sun and earth, is the eternal renewal and fertility. Does this have any connection at all with the cross of Christ? Furthermore, the cross, with its four arms, is the symbol of the four points of the horizon and the emblem of human immortality. So says Taxil in his work Freemasonry, page 238. Since, my beloved, Gnosticism. Freemasonry is Gnosticism. In the clearest possible way, we have seen this very plainly, then it is no wonder at all that, just as the ancient Gnostics worshipped Cain, worshipped the serpent of the ancients, the modern Masons also worship Satan. Nothing strange at all. This is why Christ calls the deep things of the Gnostics the deep things of Satan. Let them come and disprove us. They worship Satan. Christ reveals it to us. The Gnostics, notes Leo Taxil, just like today's Freemasons, recognized as the principle of the good of Lucifer, the devil, and as the principle of evil, Sabaoth. So then, the God of the Old Testament is the evil God, the originator of evil, because he made matter, and the devil, Lucifer, is the good spirit, the good God. Shudder, I beg you, and here, accordingly, is a prayer to the devil. Come, Lucifer, come. You whom the priests have slandered, you whom the kings have condemned, come, come. Let us embrace you. Let us hold you close in our arms. Let us hold you close in our arms. Long have we known you, and long have you known us as well. Your works do not always appear beautiful. Your works do not always appear good. O blessed one of our heart. And yet these alone can give the explanation of the universe. Without your work, O Satan. And Satan means the adversary. The universe would be absurd. You alone give it life. You alone make all labor fruitful. You ennoble vulgar wealth. You set your seal upon virtue. Yours is the rule. Yours is the throne. But as for you, Adonai. And Adonai is the God of the Old Testament. Now the prayer turns to address him. O rapacious God, O unjust God, we renounce you. Hatred to you, knowledge, we have made our own. As for you, to my happiness, alleluia, through science, we shall win it, in spite of you. Every one of our advances is a triumph beneath which the deity is crushed, that spirit of falsehood and deceit. Your kingdom is finished. Go seek your victims among the animals. Already, you have been dethroned and crushed. Your name, which until now has been the last word of the wise man, the authority of the judge under oath, the strength given to the poor, the refuge of the guilty one who repents. Hey, that unutterable name of yours, from this moment onward, will carry the scorn and the anathema of man. It will be blotted out as a synonym for hypocrisy, for falsehood, for superstition, for tyranny, for unbelief, since only a devil can speak like this, eh? So long as humanity keeps shutting itself up in a struggle of primal, monstrous deities. Adonai, humanity will be the slave of kings and priests, and humanity will suffer, and humanity will be spat upon. This is why the triptych of the French Revolution, liberty, equality, fraternity, is said to belong to the Masons. Since man will be made to swear by your hated name, perjury will become the foundation of society. That is to say, if people who have sworn to God renounce God, this denial will be the foundation of a new society. Be lost. He turns toward God and says to him, be lost. O executioner of our reason, phantom of our conscience. And LTO Taxil adds that the Masons of the 37th degree kneel before Baphomet, which is the statue of Satan, a statue that stands above the altar and is nothing other than the great architect of the universe. So then, who is this G, who is the great architect of the universe? It is Baphomet. It is the devil. This is the one to be worshipped. Beyond that, pay attention here. When the initiate gradually, little by little, climbs and reaches the first gate of the 33rd degree, which is the final degree, he will learn the so-called secret of Masonry, the last secret of Masonry. And what is it, this notorious secret of Masonry, that the G is the devil, and that this is the one he must worship? And not the God of the Christians, whom at any cost he must destroy. This, my beloved, is the secret of Masonry, the worship of the devil, and the contempt and persecution of the true, holy Trinitarian God. And now I ask you, is it true or is it not? What the Lord reveals in his letter to the bishop of Thyatira, that he allows the deep things of Satan to take place. Tell me, is it true or is it not? This is why we have spoken about Gnosticism and about Masonry. This is the reason. Because the Masons circulate within our church. They circulate. In America, they become parish trustees. In the church, they even become clergymen. I will not say more. Do not let us be caught off guard. My beloved, the hour has passed. Two more words and we will close. Today, the Feast of our Holy Orthodoxy, we must realize that we are dealing with a fearful enemy, with Masonry. A fearful enemy, take note of it. The ancient fathers of our church stood against Gnosticism. We today must stand against Masonry, this newer Gnosticism. In this we are helped by this sacred text of the Apocalypse, and by the Lord's apocalyptic characterization, that this concerns the deep things of Satan. My beloved, horror should seize us before such realities. If among our people, I would also say to you, there are deceived persons, we are called to inform both them and those who could in the future be led astray into the deception of Masonry, as prospective candidates, that they must be careful and quickly flee from the lodge. We must help them in every way we can, but let the faithful be on their guard. Let the faithful not be intimidated when these men try by every means to sway people and to sway events. The Lord, as the sender of that earlier letter to the Bishop of Pergamos, points this out. He says, "These things says he who holds the sharp two-edged sword," and he adds, speaking of his enemies, the Satanists, "But if not, I am coming to you quickly, and I will make war against them with the sword of my mouth." These are the very words the Apostle Paul writes concerning the Antichrists and the lawless ones who are to come, for Freemasonry is the forerunner of the Antichrist, whom he says in his second letter to the Thessalonians, "The Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and abolish, will destroy and bring to nothing by the manifestation of his coming." Beloved, Satan is a reality, and he is at work. He labors relentlessly, ceaselessly, against the Church of Christ, and especially against his Orthodox Church. Let us not forget that Satan has his dwelling place and his throne upon the earth. Let us not forget that Satan has his synagogue. Let us not forget that Satan has the deep things of his cunning. And so, let us stand aright. Let us be sober and watchful, and let us keep awake.